Hello, and welcome to Recent Activity, your new favorite entertainment review podcast that attempts to cover every film, every show, all at once. I am your co-host, Andrew Morgan. With me, as always, is Ed Harris's personal stylist, Mr. Shane Beauregard. How are you, sir?
Better than his hair.
Oh, it's all there, buddy. I thought you were all inclusive. I'm sorry.
Oh, jeez. Yeah. We'll talk
His hair gets kookier in every movie I see him in. It is a luxury.
Yeah, quick to play off that, he actually wore that as a joke while filming, and the director, the director loved it so much she decided to that's your hairstyle. So
that's amazing.
Yeah, leave it to Ed Harris, man.
So that's not his hair, because sometimes he does grow it out like kind of weird.
It was hair extensions, buddy.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, he's just a Barbie girl living in a Barbie world. My man, Ed Harris.
Yeah.
But good to talk to you, sir. Obviously, we're talking about Ed Harris because we saw Love Lies Bleeding over the weekend. As you noted, this is written and directed by Rose Glass. This is her first film since St. Maud that came out a few years back during the pandemic period. So, you know. A movie that I've heard, it's one of those horror movies where I had friends go, fuck that movie and everything it represents. And then I've heard people be like, it's an excellently made movie. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I think it's how much you just buy into the madness, which is maybe a little bit of what we're going to talk about here. I don't know.
Right.
With that, so apparently she just loves playing in weird genre stuff. I'm all for it. This, of course, was a movie that came out in Sundance. Period this year, Sundance Film Festival period, to pretty solid reviews. I'm not sure. I had to look because, as I said to you, it only made $2.76 million to this point. So I wonder if this was how wide this went. But obviously it came out up where I am and down in Hollywood South, as we like to call it, where you are. So, you know, it's out enough. You know, It's touching the bases. So I'm hoping that maybe that number starts to tick up, get a little word of mouth. We also we need to hear from you later on for your side of the gentleman as you watched the entirety of that Netflix series that we talked about last week from my end. And then maybe we'll sprinkle in some other things, maybe a Shogun update from you or the fact that both of us got, you know, punished by being a parent and any other thing with Kung Fu Panda 4 and Irish Wish, the new Lindsay Lohan. Any of those things are on the table. We'll see what we get to. But let's start off, Shane, with Love Lies Bleeding. This is starring Kristen Stewart, Katie O'Brien, the immortal Ed Harris, as we noted, Dave Franco, Jenna Malone, a lot of people I like. This is about a gym manager, Lou, played by Kristen Stewart, who falls hard for Jackie, an ambitious bodybuilder heading through town to Las Vegas in pursuit of her dream, but their love ignites violence, pulling them deep into the web of Lou's criminal family. So far, so good with the scores on this one. 92% Rotten Tomato score with an 89 Rotten Tomato audience score. 77 Metascore, quite high. In fact, I noted, because I think I was copying over notes, I think it was just 1 or 2 points lower than Dune 2, which we were like gobsmacked over. So that's great. 3.8 Letterboxd, 7.3 IMDb. So good scores all the way around for this one. Like I said, but only 2.76 million at the box office. So I don't know how many people are going to note that they saw this movie and checking us for what our opinions are to match. But I hope that number goes up because I had a good time. Shane, where did you land with Love Lies Bleeding, buddy?
I'm going to be honest with you, man. I absolutely love this film. Love
right?
it. Love it, love it, love it, man. I love these just crime noir movie thriller dramas.
Yeah.
And not being familiar with the director's work at all, because I didn't see St. Maud.
Same.
I thought she just knocked this out of the park. I loved it. I thought Katie O'Brien, who plays Jackie, who I've only seen in The Mandalorian, and that was
I didn't really remember even in that. Like, I think I remember her smile more, which is a weird thing to say.
She was in some pivotal scenes in the Mandalorian because she was the
which
one
season?
season one, she was the one that was, I forgot the villain they finally, the guy from the gentleman, I forgot the actor's name.
Giancarlo Esposito, yeah.
Yeah, she was the one cohorting with him.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay, yeah, yeah. I'm with you.
So I just found her fascinating in this role. And Kristen Stewart, I will say, and this isn't like being a prisoner in the moment, I thought this was her best acting job, period. Like,
yeah,
I said after the movie, she's been in like good movies, but not because of her. Mm. I think she actually was in a great movie and she attributed to that cause with yeah. her acting. And it's the chemistry that she has with Katie O'Brien in this film. Like you said, just the love story between the two.
Yeah.
And being involved with her father at Harris, who we'll get into. And even Dave Franco was good. But I will say, I was watching this movie, the first thing I thought was, I need to take a shower. These people seem dirty and scuzzy and greasy unkempt.
Yeah,
and
everybody's just like, sweating and nasty with clothes that you're just like, is everybody on the Goodwill program here? Like, what's going on?
Yeah, but I just, man, I just loved the way this was shot. And we'll get into our scores at the end, but the last act kind of what killed my original score. I thought I was going to give this movie heading into it, you know, but after the ending, and I get what the director's going for with the metaphor and all that kind of stuff. It just got a little wonky towards the end, I thought, but
okay. Yeah.
You know, yeah, I'll just your quick thoughts, because I'm trying to still, I've been wrapping my head around this movie since I've seen it. And I love it. I love this movie.
Yeah, I mean, echoing a lot of the same things as you, I listened to a podcast that kind of like, you know, it didn't exactly do like a one-for-one comparison with these, but like that kind of neo-crime noir stuff that, you know, like when I was watching it, I thought of like Drive and some of these other like newer versions of like crime noirs, but like that movie works at a glacial pace. This movie is not that. So this is a little more exciting. It builds the relationship a little bit better. It has a little more energy to it. So I appreciate it for what it is, for sure. And I think the scores just all like resonate with it. I'm like, yes, that's exactly probably where they should be. And I like that they're all very positive, because I was very high on this movie coming out. The only thing that has, if you want to tick anything, right? We kind of said up top, the eccentricities of this movie, the whole like slowly growing woman, you know, up to the big build, and you know, the whole, just how quickly I think it happens is what jars me a little bit, especially in the moment, and even more probably thinking about it afterwards, just how quickly the steroids become the story and into the crime that happens, and then the domino that pushes everything that goes to the movie, end of the movie. So I think if you're fine with that, and if you're fine with the, you know, kind of the playful fantasy-esque type thing that they do, that, and also the one thing that I also thought of, as the movie ended, I was with someone else watching the movie, and I literally said, like, yeah, like as long as you're fine with how the outcome was, and you're just like, there's no message here. There's no like, oh, we only kill bad people or whatever. It's like, well, kinda.
Yeah, not is really it? Though. Right?
Yeah, it's like, yeah, like, are we okay with who comes out on top and who, you know, how these things go? I think a lot of this weirdly is tongue in cheek while also being very serious. So tonally, it's a bit odd, but I liked it. I liked it for its oddness. So I agree with you. I mean, I always go back and forth with Kristen Stewart, and I thought you kind of played it right, where it was like, I've seen movies where she's good in it, but the movie's terrible, or the movie's good, but she's only like, okay. And then this one I thought was the perfect, you know, melding, where it's like the movie's really good and she's really good. Yeah. So I was just like, awesome, let's ride. And like I said, I barely even remembered Katie O'Brien. I thought she was a standout. You know, she just sticks out like it's a perfect role for her. Ed Harris is just gross to look at, between the bug stuff and his hair and everything is just awful. And then Jenna Malone's hospital visit, to, I'll put it that way. I was just like, is that also exaggerated? Like the, you know, like the, you know, anabolic stuff with, you know, Katie O'Brien's Jackie. Is this also enhanced? Because it seemed to get bigger as it was going along. It was very odd. So, and then Dave Franco's injuries. holy hell. In the moment, I was just like, whoa. So this movie is one that will get your attention, whether you like it or not, and I was really riding with it. So this movie is getting a good score for me.
Yeah, it's like you said, those kooky, funny, out of the blue moments, like when Ed Harris just randomly ate that bug when he was mad. I was like, oh, that's so gross.
Yeah.
You know, and I took the, you know, her hulking out, as I'll call it, when they show her muscles expand, is like just her, two words, roid rage, right? Like that's her just like emotion and her whatever emotion she has, and that's like the metaphorical spin on it. And you said you have to have some kind of delve into the fantasy world towards the end result, which did honestly throw me for a loop for a quick second when that happened. And the person I was seeing with is like, yeah, I didn't really like that. And I get both sides of the coin.
Sure.
You know? So.
Hey, you're in or you're out.
Yeah. I just took this movie as just like a tragic, like you said, there's no morality compass in this movie. There's no message in this movie at all. I just think their love story will always have, they'll always be digging themselves out of a predicament as the movie went along, as you saw in the last scene with that poor girl. Golly, that poor girl.
I know.
When that scene happened, like, there's no way she's, she is. And like... You know, the way she's, and I'm like, and I just think that's how the relationship's going to be from here on out. I just don't, you know, it's going to end. They set it up where it's going to eventually end tragically, or they're just going to run out of ways to cover their tracks. But no, like you said, it's a quick moving movie. You don't have to wait for crap to happen because it just happens really quick. So, you know, and I'm assuming this movie's set in the 80s, obviously, from the gym that they were. Which she worked at, which that toilet scene was pretty fucking gross. Oof,
So, like you said, everything is just scuzzy.
Yeah, scuzzy. I just wanted a shower.
Yeah.
But those were kind of gyms I used to work out in back in the day. So I kind of like, I kind of liked it, you know? But
so you were the guy in the parking lot hitting on her.
Yeah, that guy was Keith Jardine, for all you old school MMA UFC fans. He was one of the original UFC fighters back in the day. Yeah,
I recognize the name. I didn't recognize him. That's a good point.
Yeah, so, but no, this movie has me wanting to see more of this director and see what she has up her sleeve. And I hope this movie kind of like gets more people in the theater, or at least when it gets to a streaming service, that more people will actually find the time to watch it and get past the, call it what it is. Some people are turned off because it's a story about two, you know, female lovers. Just get over that fact and open your minds, people, because it's a worth your while film.
Absolutely. I totally agree. I mean, this is right now my second favorite movie of the year, right after on the heels of Dune Part 2, which is great because now, again, the insufferable podcast episodes maybe we had over January and February where we're just complaining a lot, or if anything, only liking TV, you know, or something to that ilk. This is a great March if we're here midway through and we got a couple of really solid gems that can go forward pretty well. So that, I think, is the great takeaway here. Did you want to throw out your score here on this one?
Yeah, it's funny because you said the Dune 2. I forgot I saw Dune 2 for a second because I walked out of the theater. And my first thought was, that was the best movie I've seen all year. And I'm driving my car. I'm like, nah, you dipshit. Like, you saw Dune. So it's my second favorite film of the year so far by far. Yeah. I'm actually going really high on this score. I'm giving it a 4.5, man. I would have given I would have given it a 5 if it weren't for the ending. They kind of tanked it down a 0.5 for me.
Yeah.
I just love everything about this film. So it's a 4.5. I can't find too many flaws for myself in this particular film.
Yeah, like I said, my flaws were minimal, but like not something I can totally ignore with, you know, the things I said earlier. But yeah, 4 out of 5 for me. You know, not too far off from you. It might be one of those ones that lingers even better where I go, you know, maybe give it a little tick later on or something. But 4 out of 5 seems good. Like, actually, when I saw the 3.8, I was like, yeah, we're like right on on the nose here. So, but yeah, 4 out of 5 for me. Solid movie, especially for this time of year. I'm surprised it didn't get more flowers coming out of Sundance. Like, I thought people gave it like a pretty decent shake, but I didn't hear it like some ooh, watch out, you know, kind of a movie. So that's interesting. But yeah, this is I'm glad this got a theatrical. I'm glad it's out now and didn't like wait to try to see if it could drum up something later. It's right where it should be, and hopefully it gets more business as time goes along.
Yeah, I'm with you, and I hope Kate O'Brien could use this as a launching pad in some other roles, and hope she doesn't get like kind of typecast into things. So we'll see. You know, a lot of interesting stuff from this film. So
yeah, I don't know if she's quote always like that, like that ripped, that like what's her deal. But I honestly, whatever.
She was pretty ripped.
Just so I'm surprised that maybe this might be, if she's interested, of course, you know, whether she gets looped into the comic book circuit or action circuit of some sort, some franchisey stuff outside of the Mandalorian. It would suit her, but I honestly don't think that's like where I want her, really.
No.
So it's tough. Like, her physique, her physicality can betray her, because I think she's actually just really good. Like, it's not like when they just like try to throw in a Gina Carano or
that's
something.
That's just what I was thinking of too. I was like, she's better than, she's honestly, it's not even close. She's better than Gina Carano as far as like pure acting, I think, goes.
Yeah. She's delightful. Like, it's an interesting mix of a human being, quite frankly, and let alone an actress, and what she's capable of. So I think the sky is the limit for her. She could do whatever she wants. And like I said, always good to see Ed Harris and Jenna Malone, some of these people I haven't seen in a minute, and poor Dave Franco. So obviously not for his character, but good God. That if I had to go on like a scale of like 1 to Jared Leto in Fight Club, where do you think that lands?
Oh God, that makes Jared Leto, I don't even know. It's not even comparable, man. Like, holy crap.
Hey, she just wanted to destroy something beautiful, man.
And like, it was, just fucking destroyed. She destroyed it, is for sure. Yeah, when it happened, I was like, did I see a flap? And I'm like, oh yeah, that was exactly what I thought it was.
And he showed it multiple times. Rose Glass doesn't give a fuck, dude. That's my favorite thing. This movie does not give a fuck.
Nope.
And I love it for it. So more movies don't give a fuck and entertain me, please. Thank you. Speaking of not giving a lot of fucks, you binged The Gentlemen, which is tremendous. After I gave my glowing review on it last week, I am very interested to see where you landed, but some of our messages kind of tipped the hand. But for the people, where does Shane land with Guy Ritchie's The Gentlemen on Netflix?
It's the best TV show of the year so far, and it's really not even close. Like, it's not close. It's exactly what you want from a Guy Ritchie project. I know he directed the first two, as you pointed out, but from, like you said, and you said exactly what I'm going to echo, is the character development as it goes on. Like, every character gets a chance to develop and shine. And Theo James, man, knocks this role out of the park.
Yeah. Which, his stock is rising. Like, all the online reviews, just anecdotes from friends, everybody's just like, Theo James.
Yeah, and I could see why, because watching him in White Lotus, I'm like, yeah, he's like nonchalant. You don't even think about his acting or his character that much. But this is a total 180 role for him. And man, the relationship he has with Susie Glass was phenomenal.
She's
my
standout.
I love her character. Love her character, man.
She caught me off guard because, again, not really like an American crossover. You know, she's more of like a British character actress or whatever to this point. She crushed it.
Crushed it. Like you said, she's probably the star of the show, right outside of Theo James. I liked Vinnie Jones more
it's
subdued.
It's their story. Yeah.
Yeah, I liked Vinnie Jones more subdued, you know, caretaker role. Because usually he's the guy who's outlandish and popping off and, you know, expecting trend. I know he's old. He's long in the tooth these days. But just that quiet, just, you know, understated role was fantastic. I loved how the plot developed, and towards the end, you really couldn't. You thought it would go one way, then it zigged the other way, then it zigged back the other way, and you're like, oh shit, how are they going to get out of this situation? And it just all came together in a nice, cohesive show. It wasn't any loose ends. It wasn't like, oh, what happened to that? Or why did this happen? It just all came together great. As you said, like, if this is all we get, it did its job, you know, like. Yeah. But I wanted to see more of this world, whether we continue with Theo James and Susie, or, you know, Susie and his Duke's expansion in this world, or we hop onto another story within this world. I'm fine either way. But, man, I've been telling everyone that will listen that you have to go see this, or you have to just sit there and watch this show. It is very bingeable. I can watch this series again and enjoy it just as much.
Yeah.
And especially if you're a Guy Ritchie fan, man. Like, this is old school Guy Ritchie to a T, man. It's
absolutely.
And it's funny. This shows our age a little bit. I was talking to someone from work, and I recommended it to him. I was like, well, if you like old school Guy Ritchie, like, he was like, what? I'm like, Snatch. He's like, what's that? I'm like, oh, my God. Right? And then finally, what gets most younger people is, like, he did the Sherlock Holmes movies with Robert Downey Jr., and they're like, oh, Guy Ritchie. I'm like, yeah, okay, yeah. Well.
Live action Aladdin. Shut the
fuck up. Right?
Yeah. Let's get back to
business. This is the best show, and I'm blown away by it, man. And it's funny because I went back and looked on the Rotten Tomatoes site, and the critics only gave it like 71%. I'm like, what the hell were you
watching? It's actually down to 69. I was looking it up as you were talking because I was curious. But yeah, on the people side, like, IMDb's over, like, it's like an 8.2. The audience score on Rotten Tomatoes is 85. So the people love it. So the critics can shove it up their asshole.
Yeah.
So I don't care.
They can.
Yeah.
So, man, what an enjoyable watch, man. I wish I could. It's one of those shows that I wish I had the day off, because I would watch all eight episodes in one day.
Oh, yeah. 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 I almost did. Yeah, I started it late in the day on that weekend where it came out on a Saturday, and I just, you know, kind of crushed like four or five before I went to bed. And as soon as I got up, I was like, I got someplace to be, but man, can I fit like one in here? And then kind of like slow go and try to.
It's that
kind of
show.
It is.
And what helps it out is like, I'll just tell people, like, the early episodes are like an hour, but then they get to like 40 minutes, man. Like, they're like 40, 42 minutes, and it's like the perfect runtime for that kind of thing, man. They pack a lot into
well-paced.
It. Yeah,
yeah, well-paced. Yeah, well-paced. Keeps it going.
Yeah, they pack a lot into it, man. So I love it, love it, love it, love it. Best show of the year so far.
I was about to say, if you want to sprinkle the best completed show, or however you want to position it, because you're loving Shogun, and I'm still behind. So
yeah.
Give me a tease. Give me, because I saw the first episode. I'm that behind.
Oh,
I think so. I'm still not back. It's one of those, like, I wanted to collect a few because I wanted to get in the zone of this show. But you're, what is it? Four in? Three in? Where are we?
Just finished the fourth one. The fourth one is the newest one, man. And you're right in saying the most completed show, because this is a vastly different show. This is and more of an epic, slow-paced war culture. Just, it's a lot going on in this show, man. But it is phenomenal. Just phenomenal show. So it may be short-lived as far as The Gentleman Is My Favorite Show goes. But, you know, we're getting into more action as the series is going on. More strategy going on with the Lord Torinaga. Kind of separating himself from the council and the other lords, and he's kind of on an island by himself. So now he's trying to strategically set himself up, and we don't really know what he's up to, honestly. So it's a lot shrouded in mystery. We're getting a lot more of John Blackhorn, or whatever they call him in the show, the Angie. I forgot what they call the Angie. Is that right? Angie or something? What do the Japanese call him?
In the I first don't remember.
Episode? Okay. Sorry. Yeah. That's all right. All right. We'll call him John. So John's getting more involved. He's starting training. Some naval training with the troops and all that kind of stuff, but you're getting an intense battle, like fight scenes, but a lot of strategy still right now. So it's slow paced in a lot of it, but then it picks it up and it always leaves you wanting more, which is what you want from a show. So the thing is, like we discussed off the mic, this is not a show you can check your phone or play Angry Birds on. Like, you have to be engaged with every conversation, because it seems like every conversation they have is crucial to the plot and what's going to be happening, or, you know, the foreshadowing of things. So if you miss a conversation, you'll watch it seem like, what the, like, how did this happen? I got to rewind it. So you got to pay attention, man. But they are knocking this show out of the park, man. I'm loving this show.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to just having, like, you know, day off, you know, binge it out, collect myself, and get back on pace. But yeah, I was so impressed with that first episode. But yeah, it is, it's a very, it's got a lot of characters, a lot of moving parts. Yeah. It's, you can't ignore anything in this show. You're absolutely right. So that is, I want to be laser focused. I want to be well rested. I want an afternoon to just lock in and get it done. So I will be doing that shortly, and I will love every minute of it the way it sounds from you. So yes, not yet the belt for Shogun.
Correct. Not yet.
But the gentleman does have the belt.
Yes.
For me, and it sounds like you at the moment. So we're good. And obviously, like we talked about it off air as well, like this weekend is also like just a heavy TV potential weekend too. We got the Three Body Problem, the new show from the Game of Thrones creators, Benioff and Weiss, doing this one. Again, another like very heady show. Some of the trailer kind of almost reminded me of like that the first season of Sandman.
Yeah,
that came out almost in look and tone and whatever. I'll be interested to see if that kind of holds up. It seems like almost like I think it's like trying to prevent the end of the world with a little more like life lessons and things mixed in here. So it's a little more headier than most. So I'm curious to see how that goes. I know, I believe it got mostly positive, but some critical, you know, I don't want to say backlash, that's strong, but like not everybody was on board, but like early scores seem to be mostly positive for Three Body Problem. But I think Netflix was just hoping that it was going to be like a slam dunk, you know, that it was going to catch on and be this big thing. So we'll see. We'll see how that goes. That comes out this weekend. And also Manhunt, the show on Apple TV Plus about the aftermath of the assassination of Abraham Lincoln and the pursuit of John Wilkes Booth. So that I am really looking forward to. That seems right up my alley. You know, historical drama mixed in with like a genre type that I like is pretty cool. So I'm in for that. You in for that one too? Or is that something that tickles your fancy?
No, I'll give it a watch. I'm not, maybe it's not up my alley as yours is.
Right.
But Apple, like we've discussed many times, Apple TV does not put out bad shows. So I'll at least be intrigued by this show and give it a watch. So we'll see where it goes.
Exactly. So that's pretty much the update on that. I mean, we both, like I said, I mentioned, you know, we both watched Kung Fu Panda 4 with our children. We both watched Irish Wish. I was forced to. I don't know what you're doing with your life, but I guess it's a Lindsay Lohan check-in, like a wellness check, right?
Yeah.
Is that what everybody's doing? I'm sure it did well. I even mentioned in my review where, by the way, spoiler, I ripped it to shreds. I was actually shocked because you scored this on Letterboxd. I almost wanted to like message you and be like, you cool? Like, that was a little too high. Are you all right? So was I too gentle are you too gentle or am I too much of a jerk? Because I'll tell you what set me off, and I'm curious to know if it set you off.
Okay, go ahead.
The movie felt like it was written by AI. Like, it was that... Me, like, no dialogue felt like it spit out from a human being.
I can
and
see,
that bothered me a lot.
I can see your point. I think you're still a little too harsh. And maybe I was a little too kind. I was going to give, for all you that don't know, I gave it a 2.5. I wanted to give it a 2, right? But at the end of the day, it's a harmless movie. It's a Hallmark movie. Let's call it what it is. It's a movie you'll find on Hallmark. It's sit next to your girlfriend, wife, or whatever, and let her have a good time watching this movie. And
sure, but okay, with that barometer though, right? Because I too went in going, is it better or worse than Falling for Christmas? Her
it's
last
worse.
Attempt.
It's worse.
It's worse. And yes. That's why I'm like, but it's like a lot worse. And I like, and again, Falling for Christmas is not some perfect movie, but I was just like, okay, but at least it has some charm, like the small town charm stuff had a very cute kid actor
it did.
In it that like just makes it perfect for a kid movie, a Christmas movie. And then also she got to do some physical comedy and try some things. This movie just had no life.
Yeah. Well, maybe I was too nice in the moment. To be, because now that you're saying all this, I'm like, maybe I should take it down to a 1.5. No,
yeah,
but
that's
no,
exactly what I did.
Yeah, I know. Maybe
the takedown is on.
Because I did compare it to her Christmas movie, and that one, like you said, was charming. It was funny. It was, it was an enjoyable movie. This one was by the numbers, like you said, I guess kind of lifeless. Now that I think about it, I don't know. I just wasn't. But I was like, okay, it was okay. Her wardrobe was terrible.
If you were making out during this movie or something, I'll let it slide. If you were just like ignoring it and it was just on in the background.
I did notice how much of an ugly crier Lindsay Lohan is. Like, I don't know if you, she has such a terrible cry face.
It wasn't convincing. Yeah.
Bad cry face.
Yeah.
And we caught some errors. Like, she'll start a scene with some like white nylons on or something under her skirt. And like the very next scene, no more nylons under the same skirt. So I'm like,
Ooh.
Naughty. Yes. Well, either that or like poor editing. I don't know what's going on with this film, but yeah, it was good. I don't know, man. Okay,
yeah, I'm sure they had reshoots.
Yeah,
stuff.
I'm bringing it down to a 2 now. I guess. Damn you, Andrew.
I know,
but maybe maybe Lucy. Lucy, listen to me. Lindsay Lohan is going to be Netflix answer for Candace Cameron over at whatever station she's on now.
Yeah, I was about to say, well, see, Netflix does this. They pluck other people. See, again, this is where my barometer maybe is a little different from yours. I don't know how much you have to ingest this stuff, right? Netflix, this is their job, like, in a way. They pluck people from, like, Hallmark and Lifetime and some of these other things, stars that used to be prominent, and then they just, like, shine them up and put them in a Netflix thing and is like, we revived your career. And sometimes that actually works.
Yeah.
Rachel Lee Cook has done, like, 3 movies for them now, and she was literally doing back-to-back-to-back Hallmark movies until she did that, and now she can kind of keep doing this. And they did that with I saw Gabrielle Union come back, like, and Brooke Shields and some of these other people where it's like, oh, look, here we go. And this one didn't work. That's
I just think Lynn is gonna be I said after the movie, well, whatever station she's on now has Candace Cameron. Hallmark now seems to have Lacey Chabert, and now we have Lindsay Lohan for Netflix. And just let them roll from there, man. Like, it's fine.
Yeah. Candace Cameron, if I'm not mistaken, so is she a party to her brother's religious beliefs?
I think she is, but not quite as heavy-handed.
Right.
Not quite as heavy-handed, but in that general ballpark, yes.
Because I was trying to think, like, those specific stations that would play something maybe with a more religious bent, but
I think I think that's what it was. It's called like I forgot what even channel she left. It was like American Family something. I don't know.
That sounds right. Yeah. But yeah, so yeah, I just wanted to tease you on that one. And also, like I said, we saw Kung Fu Panda 4. I haven't seen a Kung Fu Panda movie since the first one, quite frankly. And this one was fine.
Yeah.
And Awkwafina is going to be in every voice role till the end of time.
Yeah.
So that's where she's going
to
live.
My kids liked it, and that's trying exactly to get out of a kid's movie. It is what it is. I've seen all of them so far.
Yeah. So where is this? Where's your? This is what you come to recent activity for. What is Shane's Kung Fu Panda power rankings?
Here we go. Number one is the original. And then I go one. Yeah,
three-way tie.
I go 1, 2, 4, 3.
Okay.
Yeah.
So not the worst, but not the best. Gotcha.
Correct. Yeah,
All right. Hey, listen, I'm surprised they're still making them. Yeah, that they're not straight to Netflix or whatever.
I was shocked when I saw a trailer for Kung Fu Panda 4.
Yeah.
Because I saw in a trailer like this past year, I was like, oh, they're making a fourth one? Do we need a fourth one? No. But
when has that ever stopped them? I like the Toy Story movies, and I heard like that they are going to do 5 probably, and I was like, stop it. You had a perfect ending in 3. 4 was okay. Stop it.
Well, they're doing the same thing with Despicable Me. They're making a 4th one. So I'm like, yep. Ugh.
But that's going to print money. That like that just never ends. Like the, because it's 4 of those plus 2 Minions movies. There was Minions and then the one where they go back in time, like to the 70s, right? Or were those the same movie? I don't know. I haven't seen these either.
It might have been, I think it was a prequel of,
Yeah, it's like when they first meet Gru or whatever, but isn't that a Minions movie? Not
that
a,
was Minions, and then the one with the Minions heavy in it was when Gru was a kid and he started doing stuff with the Minions, so that actually was a Despicable, no, that was a Minions movie. The Dawn of Gru or some shit like that.
Yeah, right. Exactly. That's exactly what I thought it was.
Yeah, yeah. That's it. Okay.
So, yeah. So, whatever. That, like I said, they have like 5-6 movies and they're still going. Whatever. Yeah. They're fine. Yeah. They'll probably just please, for the love of God, if I have to take my kids, I don't want to see one gentle minion. Were you familiar with this phenomenon from last time? I'm just, no. Or don't come up with something else, please, for the love of God. Just let me, you know, kind of check out and get 2 hours of rest.
Yeah.
You know
exactly.
what I'm saying? That's all I want.
Exactly.
All right, man. Well, great job by you.
You forgot something.
Oh, I did.
Quick.
I did.
Yeah, you mentioned your Apple TV show and what was up Andrew's alley. The No Pants movie of the week, if you're wondering, is Roadhouse People, the remake of Roadhouse.
Oh, I did. You're right. Yeah.
That is right up Shane's alley.
It is. And like it's getting really solid reviews out of South by Southwest. It was like really, really good. So I don't know what that means. Does it mean like they captured the essence but updated it nicely? Or was it like they did something completely different? It's Doug Liman, right?
Yeah.
Like it's, you know, I love the Doug Liman experience, man. That guy just makes interesting stuff all the time. Obviously, I loved him right out the gate. You know, I believe he did Swingers, you know, with Jon Favreau, and then ended up in the Bourne Identity series. And then, you know, that's a hell of a way to start your career. So that guy has always kind of been like, I don't know, you know, kind of almost how we feel about Matthew Vaughn or early Soderbergh or something like that. So he's kind of got a mix of that. I just always like his vibe. He takes chances.
Yeah,
I like him.
Absolutely. So that's my No Pants movie of the week, people.
Perfect, man. Yes, so much to cover. So hopefully next week's episode might be a little longer than we've been doing the last couple weeks. Or we'll just check out and just like end up shooting guns into the sky and crying. Yeah, it's fine by me. But great job by you as always. Everybody out there, please give us a 5-star review wherever you are listening. Subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. Especially if Shane will have no pants next weekend. That'll be huge. So please jump on board, tell a friend, do the whole thing, and return next time on an episode of Recent Activity.